It is very nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have temperatures in the high 40s, 47 presently. Mostly cloudy skies, south winds at 12, 10 miles of visibility. It's a nice crab fest day right now. We are looking for a possibility of showers this afternoon until about 7 p.m. or so. Look for cloudy skies overnight too, with southwest winds 5 or 10. Partly sunny skies for Saturday and Sunday. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Alaska Department of Law has voided regulations aimed at restructuring the Area M commercial salmon fishery. And travelers, be ready for some delays at the airport.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. Tulsi Gabbard is resigning as President Trump's Director of National Intelligence. NPR's Franco Ordonez reports she says she's leaving to support her husband, who's battling a rare form of bone cancer.
In a letter to President Trump, Gabbard thanked the president for the opportunity to lead the office of the Director of National Intelligence, but she said she needed to be there for her husband. She wrote, "I cannot in good conscience ask him to face this fight alone while I continue in this demanding and time-consuming position." Gabbard is the latest in a series of cabinet officials to leave the Trump administration. Other departures include Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem and Attorney General Pam Bondi. Trump commended Gabbard for doing a, quote, incredible job and said he will miss her. He added that Principal Deputy Director of National Intelligence Aaron Lucas will serve as Acting Director of National Intelligence. Franco Ordonez, NPR News, The White House.
NATO foreign ministers gathered in Sweden amid conflicting announcements from Washington about the U.S. troop presence in Europe. Terry Schultz reports Secretary of State Marco Rubio says European governments should not be surprised by coming cuts.
As Secretary of State Rubio flew to Sweden to meet his 32 NATO counterparts, President Trump issued a message on Truth Social, canceling an earlier announcement that some 4,000 U.S. troops would not be deployed as planned on a rotation to Poland. Instead, Trump said 5,000 would be sent to Poland. While the reversal was welcomed by Rubio's European counterparts, he warned them reductions are in fact coming.
That work was already ongoing, and it's been done in coordination with our allies. I'm not saying they're going to be thrilled about it, but they certainly are aware of it.
Rubio said he could not share details of what capabilities or forces the U.S. would cut in Europe, as that's handled by the Pentagon. For NPR News, I'm Terry Schultz in Helsingborg.
Around 39 million Americans are expected to be driving this weekend, according to AAA. This as gas prices have risen about 35% since the war in Iran began. NPR's Stephen Basaha has some tips for drivers on saving money.
When driving, think slow and smooth. The faster you go above 55 miles per hour, the less fuel efficient your car becomes. Gentle acceleration and braking also helps. When refueling, feel free to skip the more expensive premium gas. Unless your car requires premium, you could stick with regular without any damage. And when you're filling up that car, also consider filling up your tires. Underinflated wheels will hurt your fuel efficiency. Also, pack light. Less weight in the car means less spending. The cooler gets a pass, though, if you're packing road snacks and sandwiches. After all, saving gas isn't much help if you're spending more refueling your stomach. Stephen Masaha, NPR News.
Wall Street higher by the closing bell, the Dow up 294 points. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT News, I'm Terry Haynes. The Alaska Department of Law has voided regulations aimed at restricting the Area M commercial salmon fishery. As reported by KUCB, the regulations were passed by the State Board of Fisheries in February and quickly challenged in a lawsuit filed by the Aleutians East Borough, the native village of Unga, and two commercial fishing groups. They argued that the regulations couldn't be enforced because the Board of Fisheries violated state ethics laws while adopting them. The groups dropped the lawsuit on Wednesday after the state revoked the new rules, with both sides agreeing to end the case. Area M has long been the center of a fight over salmon conservation in western Alaska, where low chum and Chinook returns have led to major restrictions in subsistence fishing. The five regulations approved by board members at their February meeting would have reduced when and where commercial salmon harvesters could fish in the South Alaska Peninsula, commonly called Area M. They would also have added closures tied to Chinook salmon harvests. The borough and other plaintiffs, including the native village of Unga, argued that some of the board's votes were invalid due to undisclosed conflicts of interest, and that some of the board members should not have participated in the vote. The issue has divided fishing groups across Alaska for decades. Subsistence harvesters in western Alaska, most notably native communities in the Yukon-Kuskokwim region, have raised alarm over dismal salmon returns. They say the intercept fishery in Area M has contributed to poor returns in their region and led to closures that threatened their entire way of life. Area M fishermen and local officials say the restrictions would hurt fishing communities without doing much to help salmon returns. Representative Louise Stutes applauded the Attorney General's decision to void the board's actions in a Wednesday statement. Air travelers trying to fly out of Anchorage have found themselves stuck in unusually long lines headed into the Memorial Day weekend. The Transportation Security Administration says the delays are due to intermittent outages with its X-ray screening equipment at Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport. Airport spokesperson Lex Yelverton says air travelers should arrive 2 to 3 hours before their departure time.
TSA is actively working to address the current situation. However, extended wait times are expected to continue throughout the day and may persist into Friday.
Technicians are looking into the X-ray machine issues, and airport staff are working to minimize the long wait times, according to the TSA. Yelverton says the airport will share updates on its social media channels. The Juneau Assembly may have found a path out of the red for its budget on Wednesday night, but it wasn't easy. KTOO's Clarice Larson breaks down what they chose to cut and keep as the deadline nears for finalizing the city's budget for the next fiscal year.
It was a late-night finance committee meeting on Wednesday night for the Assembly. They spent more than 5 hours voting on a list of what to cut and what to keep as the city faces a multi-million dollar shortfall next fiscal year. There were a lot of numbers, amendments, and as Mayor Beth Weldon pointed out, things got messy.
Now I'm totally confused, and it's 10:30 at night.
Yes, and it is 10:30 at night.
The Assembly voted not to close the Douglas Fire Station, which was on the chopping block Wednesday night, but they did unanimously vote to close and sell the Mount Jumbo Gym. It voted last week to also preserve Juneau's pools, Diamond Park Fieldhouse, and social service grants. The Assembly also decided to not close the Juneau Douglas City Museum, but instead they voted in a 7-2 split to reduce the museum's annual funding by $261,000. Deputy City Manager Robert Barr explained that it wouldn't close the museum, but it would mean laying off 2 staff members and drastically reducing the museum's hours.
The number of hours would be, I would say, more variable than they are right now because the staffing would be significantly reduced. And I would say our ability to be open regular hours would be very challenging at this level, but we would have the ability to be open sometimes.
The roughly $250,000 cut would also eliminate the museum's capacity to host public programs like First Fridays, exhibit openings, and school class visits. Assembly member Maureen Hall voted against any reductions to the museum, arguing there are other ways to balance the budget that wouldn't be as drastic.
It's our history, and I don't think we should be cutting off access to it as we ponder how to move forward.
The Assembly also voted to reduce funding to Travel Juneau, the city's landscaping budget, the Juneau Economic Development Council, the Jensen Olsom Arboretum, and eliminate an administrative support position in the city's administration department. The Assembly also advanced a plan that plays a significant role in getting the budget in the black. It voted to pull $2.7 million from a 1% temporary sales tax that voters approved in 2022, meant for the city's restricted budget reserve, and instead moved it to the general fund. The restricted budget reserve is essentially the city's rainy day fund and meant for extreme emergencies or unexpected events. The Assembly voted to maintain funding to the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, the Small Business Development Center, the city's Affordable Housing Fund, and the city's staff and travel training budget. Assemblymember Alicia Huskandes said supporting housing development is critical for Juno's future.
We are in a super housing crisis. This is not the time that you press the brake. It is the time you hit the gas. It is not the time you reduce funds. I understand we are in the fiscal situation that we are in, but when you are looking for areas to make cuts, this is not where you look.
The Assembly is also looking at ways to increase city revenue, like revising the city's sales tax cap on some higher-priced items and services, and lowering the property tax hardship exemption income level. If the Assembly votes to act on any of those ways to increase revenue, it may choose to reverse some cuts made on Wednesday before it finalizes the budget. Assemblymember Christine Wall reminded the Assembly that nothing is permanent yet.
What we are trying to do tonight is come to a holistic budget that we can pass to the full Assembly so that the public can get one more opportunity to give us feedback on it. And nothing is set in stone until we vote as a full Assembly on June 8th.
Residents will have another chance to testify on the budget at a meeting on June 8th. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
A tribal college on the North Slope last month bought a piece of land to build a new campus. College officials announced their purchase on May 20th. Alona Niden with the Alaska Desk has more.
Illisagri College has been planning a new campus for nearly 10 years. This month, the officials announced a land purchase to build it on. Justina Wilhelm is the college's president. She says the campus will sit on a 15-acre site in Utqiagvik near the hospital.
So this has been a long-standing vision for the college, and I'm very, very excited that we have this prime location that will be a central gathering place for our people.
Illisagvik is Alaska's only tribal college. It offers hands-on educational programs in such areas as Inupiaq studies, allied health, construction, and education. And it serves about 1,000 students in person in Utqiagvik and remotely on the North Slope and across the state. Right now, those programs are housed in buildings that were never meant to be a college. Wilhelm says the main building is a 70-year-old naval base 2.5 miles out of town. Overall, the programs are spread out between 13 different facilities.
So we're very excited to have this new campus, to be under one roof, to all be together.
Last month, the college bought a piece of land for new campus from Ukpiavik Inupiat Corporation, the Alaska Native Village Corporation for Utqiagvik. Wilhelm says the next step is completing environmental assessments and updating the design approved in 2018. The construction will start with administrative offices, family housing, and workforce development garages. Down the road, the plan is to have more housing and a big wellness gym, she says. Wilhelm says the new campus is designed to include open spaces that inspire conversations and collaboration. One vision is a glass wall between the main entrance and cafeteria, overlooking the construction trades and community outreach classroom. Wilhelm says the idea is that students at lunch can also observe some of the cultural and workforce programs available at the college.
As a tribal college with our language, values, and traditions, it's so vital that we're here to provide the spaces and provide the classes to allow for our traditions to carry on. And I'm very excited that when people come there, they're going to want to be a part of there. I hope they don't want to leave.
College officials didn't share the exact timeline for the construction. They said work is ongoing to secure funding for the next steps. In Anchorage, I'm Alona Niden.
As Americans remember veterans this Memorial Day, some hope their friends and loved ones aren't forgotten, even though they died on U.S. soil years after their service. They were victims of illnesses linked to toxic chemical exposure. Shelby Herbert reports for the Alaska Desk.
On a nippy spring morning at Birch Hill Cemetery in Fairbanks, I'm standing on Benno Cleveland's gravesite. The one he picked out himself.
Same time I purchased the one in between.
Absolutely. So this is you right here.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry I was standing on it.
No, it's all right. I hope they all do a happy dance for me.
Cleveland is a Inupiaq, one of the indigenous peoples of the Arctic. He served in the Vietnam War and received two Purple Hearts. Cleveland holds an eagle feather for the strength and courage to speak, he says, about the spot where he plans to spend eternity.
So this is hallowed ground. This is sacred ground.
Cleveland says he chose to be buried between his father, who served in World War II, and his friend, James Akavana, another Vietnam veteran. Cleveland and Akavana were both exposed to Agent Orange during their service. That's an herbicide the U.S. government used to remove dense tree cover during the war. Its effects on human health were not fully understood or publicly acknowledged for many years. Now it's associated with cancer, nerve damage, diabetes, and other long-term illnesses that affect hundreds of thousands of Vietnam veterans, including Cleveland.
I'm going to talk about Agent Orange, and there's an old saying that a picture is worth a thousand words.
That's a gallon-sized Ziploc bag full of his medications. His friend, Akavana, died a couple years ago, officially of COPD, though friends and family say they believe Agent Orange had a role.
There's a saying that says that I was killed in Vietnam, I just haven't died yet. And that pertains to those that have been affected with Agent Orange.
On this Memorial Day, Cleveland hopes Americans remember veterans like Akavana. Akavana's widow, Garnet Akavana, says she feels the pain of her husband's death particularly hard on Memorial Day. She remembers her late husband as a kind man with a warm sense of humor, but says things like war films and even the sound of jets overhead would take him straight back to Vietnam.
After he came back, he just got changed. He couldn't watch Pearl Harbor or anything like that because it would end up on the floor, and he said, "They're coming," and I heard those bombs.
Akavana says life has been hard without him. Between her grief, financial struggles, and trying to navigate the Veterans Affairs system. Their story is hardly rare in Alaska, home to the nation's highest population of veterans per capita. Ann Masker moved to the state with her husband Willard after his service in Vietnam.
His favorite thing was scrambling around the Wrangell Mountains looking for Dall sheep. So my assumption is the reason he went was for the peace.
Willard succumbed to Agent Orange-related vascular dementia a few years ago, though Masker says it felt like she lost him years before he died.
The kinds of things that he loved to do, he couldn't do. So he would spend literally hours in his recliner with the clicker, you know, watching TV, watching sports, watching this, watching that, and drifting off.
Masker says this time of year always brings back memories of the life she shared with her husband.
I'm sorry to be so simple, but first of all, I miss him every day. And Memorial Day will probably magnify that, but I'm so proud of him and who he was and of the many people we knew and people we lost. And Memorial Day is all about respect.
Looking back on his life and service, Benno Cleveland echoes that sentiment. He's preparing a speech for the community's annual Memorial Day ceremony to honor the service members who gave their lives for their country, either in wartime or decades after they served. Reporting in Fairbanks, I'm Shelby Herbert.
A bill that would change the scope of an Alaska sexual assault law passed through the legislature on Wednesday as part of a 10-bill package. Specifically, it alters a law that criminalizes sexual assault by a medical provider. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry has more.
Democratic junior representative Sarah Hannon's bill comes after a high-profile sexual assault trial in the capital city that ended with two acquittals and 14 charges declared mistrials in September. The case involves more than a dozen former patients, predominantly Alaska Native women, who accused chiropractor Jeffrey Fultz of sexual assault under the guise of medical care while he worked at Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium in Juneau. As it stands now, a key part of the legal definition of sexual assault by a medical provider requires that the alleged victim isn't aware of sexual contact happening in the moment. That's what Hannon's bill would change, which she calls a loophole in the law. If signed into law by Governor Mike Dunleavy, that stipulation would be removed. That means sexual contact by a medical provider during the course of treatment would be considered assault, regardless of the patient's awareness. However, the change can't be applied to the charges in the ongoing case against Foltz. After the bill's passage on Wednesday afternoon, Hannon gave thanks to someone who's been testifying on behalf of the bill since it was introduced earlier this year, Saithton Jamie Ann Hasselquist.
She has demonstrated great resiliency and courage to come forward, and I want to thank and acknowledge her. The updates to this bill do not impact her case. Her charges have been dismissed. The law is not retroactive, but she is advocating to make sure that future victims aren't created by cases that can't be prosecuted.
Hasselquist is one of Foltz's former patients. She testified against Foltz during the 2025 trial, and the charges associated with her accusations were the two the jury declared not guilty. It's unclear if the loophole was a factor in the dismissals. Jurors' reasons aren't made public. But shortly after the jury returned its verdict last fall, the judge in the case dismissed one of the remaining charges, and the reason he gave does involve the loophole. Judge Larry Wolford ruled that one of the alleged victim's testimony didn't match the existing legal definition of the charge for sexual assault by a medical provider. The acquittal order said the charge was dismissed because she was aware that the contact she received was, quote, sexual and that it was not a part of legitimate medical treatment, unquote. And changing that loophole was the heart of Hannon's bill. Hasselquist, the former patient, says she's been fighting for the change since her charges were acquitted, and this bill passing out of the legislature will allow her to rest. She says she hopes it also brings a bit of peace to the women whose charges are still active and may be retried.
I consistently, through my testimonies, have sent strength out to the women who are still involved in this case. And again, I know that this isn't going to help them in their case, but I hope that it brings some sort of justice to them in knowing that this loophole is closed.
And the remaining 13 charges against Foltz may still be retried, but the court has not been able to schedule a second trial yet. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cremery.
GrabFest, hosted by the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce, has been a part of Kodiak since 1958 and is a celebration of the abundant resources our community receives from the sea. Join in the fun May 21st through the 25th. Visit KodiakCrabFest.com for a full list of events scheduled during Crab Festival. Contact the Chamber of Commerce at 907-486-5557 with all your Crab Fest questions.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the 22nd day of May, the year 2026. The sun rose today at 5:32. It will set again at 10:41. That will give us 17 hours and 8 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 3 minutes and 38 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 66 degrees, set in 1949. And our record low is 30, set in 1977, and in Chile, 1985. It is currently 47 degrees in Kodiak with mostly cloudy skies. It's a nice day for Crab Fest, day two of the Crab Festival. At the airport, they indicate they have southerly winds at 12 miles per hour and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for cloudy skies all day today and all night tonight, too, with maybe some showers this afternoon, at least until 7 p.m. or so. Look for south winds to continue today, 10 to 15, gusting to 20, turning to the southwest tonight. For tomorrow, look for partly sunny skies, high near 46, light westerly winds. And for Sunday, partly sunny skies, high near 50, and light westerly winds. Monday, showers are probably going to happen, mainly after 10 a.m. We have an outgoing tide. Our next low tide here on the east side will happen at 1:30 this afternoon and be -0.4 feet, followed by a high tide at 8:22 p.m. of 6.7 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 1:57 p.m. and be 0.1 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 11:39 p.m. of 11.5 feet. Your moon is at 41.2% waxing. Mariners, be aware, we have a small craft advisory for today for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 miles, southwest 25 today with 9-foot seas. For tonight, southwest 20 and 7-foot seas. And for tomorrow on our east side, variable 10, seas to 5 feet, coming down to 4 feet Saturday night. Over in the Shelikof Strait, southwest 20 for today and tonight, 5-foot seas, subsiding to 3 feet after midnight. For tomorrow, southwest 15 and 3-foot seas. Just outside of the city of Kodiak in Chiniak Bay, southwest 20 and 3-foot seas for today. For tonight, southwest 15, becoming variable 10, 2-foot seas. And for tomorrow, southwest 10, becoming variable less than 10 and 3-foot seas in Chiniak Bay tomorrow. It is indeed the second day of Crab Fest, and lots of things are going on today, including the first day of the Kodiak Public Library's Crab Fest book sale at the Kodiak Public Library. Pricing is free books from the library multipurpose room in the book barn. It's $5 per bag, $10 for a big bag, and special finds and Alaska series are as marked. Also today, the Alaska Airlines Club 49 Day. Alaska Airlines will be answering your questions, sharing what's new, and making luggage tags for Club 49 members. Music, of course, with DJ Mark. It will be at the Rendezvous Crab Fest stage at the mall starting at 11:30, already started. The Lutic Dancers, a special treat, will be there at noon at the Crab Fest stage at the mall. They're performing right now. And at 1 to 1:30, look for Polly Sway on the Crab Fest stage. Kodiak, This Is Me will be playing again from 2:30 to 2:45 and starting, or 3:45, I believe that should be. And of course, the Lego building contest and the brats, hot dogs, and Frito chili, all available at the Kodiak Elks Lodge starting at 4 p.m. today. Don't miss the Crab Fest artist poster signing. That's at 4 to 5 p.m. at the, I believe that is in the Harbor Master office. And the Kodiak Balalaika Players, they're going to be at 6 p.m. at the History Museum. Crab Fest art show begins at 5 through 7:30 p.m. at the Harbor Master office. It's always great fun.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the May 22nd edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. Boy, we've had some great minus tides this week. If you're a tide pooler, take advantage of the minus tide on Friday at 1:30 in the afternoon. But if you can't get out this weekend, don't worry, there'll be some more minus tides at the end of the month. I don't know about you, but I have loved hearing the sounds of songbirds again. After the cold winter we had, those songs are even more welcome than usual. I've been hearing all sorts of sparrows and thrushes, but I still haven't heard the summer bird yet, the golden-crowned sparrow. Once I hear that, I'll believe summer is really here. Suspiciously absent from all the bird noise the past few weeks are the ravens. They are busy on their nests high in the spruce trees. Ravens go very quiet when they're nesting. By now, the chicks have hatched, and mom and dad will take turns feeding them until they're ready to fledge in June. Then things will get really noisy. More about that next month. Songbirds aren't the only ones back. So are the bees. I had one the size of a hummingbird go flying by me yesterday. And right now, those bees don't have much to eat. So if you have some dandelions in your yard, please don't mow them down for another week or so until there's a few more native flowers appearing. Or at least consider leaving a patch of dandelions for your bees. Better still, Add some native perennials to your garden patch for next spring's bees. It's Crab Fest weekend in Kodiak, a time to celebrate the spring with food, games, parades, art, music, and more. You can find the full schedule of events at KodiakCrabFest.com. See you at the festival. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.